Hi, Future Paul here. Just wanted to give a quick spoiler warning for this episode, as we will be talking about events, characters, and places that appear much later than A Realm Reborn. Spoilers for Heavensward, Stormblood, Shadowbringers, and Endwalker will exist in this bonus episode, so listeners beware. Hello, and welcome to a special episode of Secret Chocobo Club. My name is Paul. I also play as Nonoan Kukuin, a Hure samurai.
And my name is John. I play as Nance Ingram, a male Viera free agent who doesn't know what he wants to do in life. And it's just us two today. This is a special episode where we'll be going over kind of our hype, expectations, thoughts, general feelings about Dauntless, which is coming out in less than 2 weeks from the date of this recording, which is really exciting.
Isn't it coming out? Yeah, you're right, less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, it depends if you're going on the early access date, which is the 28th of June. Or like the official release date, which I believe is like July 3rd, if I remember correctly. I forget. It's usually about
July
4 days.
Second. It's like the Monday after or something like that. But yes, it is just the two of us. And most likely this episode will be released after Dauntless. But we did want to kind of do a bit of a Dauntless hype episode before it came out. Just to get our thoughts out there. Get them on the board. And see how right or wrong we are.
Probably the latter. Just going back listening probably to a lot latter. Of speculation pre-expansion, it's really funny, like going back and listening to like Stormblood, you know, hype, or like Shadowbringers theories, Endwalker theories, and saying how wrong the community was.
You know, I think it's more fun being wrong, because I feel like if it would be disappointing to theory craft what the next expansion is going to be like, and then to be like, oh look, I was 100% correct. Isn't that great? Like, I think that just kind of, you know, like, I almost want to be wrong, but I also want to relish in the theory crafting for Dauntless. So.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I love reading theories going into an expansion, and then even in hindsight, after you finish, just going back and reading people's wild theories. I think there was actually, like, some Reddit thread recently about, like, what were some wrong theories you had. I love just reading through those. It's so much fun. So, getting into it then, with us not being worried about being right or wrong, what are some of your foremost thoughts or predictions about what's going to happen in Dauntless? Can be the most like simple basic thing, like we're going to ride a boat across the sea to the new world. That's not really a prediction, they already told us that. Or it can be the most off the wall, out of this world prediction, like Sephiroth is going to break into the FF14 universe and stab Ysthola through the back, you know? I want everything.
Okay, so I feel like as we talk about this, I have to kind of slowly layer on these things. I do have some wilder, like crackpot theories, is just how I'm calling them. Mm-hmm. But I think the first one that I would like to see, and I feel like it'd be cool to see Final Fantasy XIV like do this, I would like to not save the world.
Yeah.
I would like us to not be in a, like, oh my gosh, if this happens, then like we're all doomed. Mm-hmm. And we gotta, you know, like step up as the Warrior of Light and like stop this, you know, cataclysmic event from happening. Like, I actually want us to scale back the severity of an issue, or at least how wide reaching whatever issue happens in, you know, Tulio-Lal is gonna be. This is mostly because of what we see post endgame in the like Marvel MCU.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Where, yeah, it's like once you go through a whole saga, right, and it comes to a close, then the next thing you tackle almost feels like it has to one up what came before, or like you need to rebuild up this huge, even more grander, more epic saga. And I think at least as the first expansion after Endwalker, now that we've all sort of tidied up everything, I just don't want that to be the case. Like, I don't want this turn into another like huge, like, whoa, like all these other like lost civilizations, or it's gonna be like world ending and you gotta stop it, you know? So that's my kind of initial feel.
I am right on the same page there with you. They kind of started doing this in 6.x, specifically 6.1. I think there's even a line by one of the signs, like, they're like, oh, when's the last time we like gathered together and it wasn't because like the world was ending, you know? And I really like that. But then the way, starting in like 6.3 and onwards, it kind of went was then, oh no, like Zeramis is going to break into the source and it's going to cause, you know, end of the world kind of stakes again. Mm-hmm. So I was a little disappointed with how the 6.x series went in that direction with, you know, the Void arc and all that. Void arc, not the Alliance raid, just just to specify, I mean the Void arc that was the 6.x series. So I totally agree with you there. I do hope they don't quite escalate as quickly. You know, you see that in a lot of media, the escalation problem where, oh, you know, I beat this guy, so now we got to beat someone even bigger. And so, and like, especially in FF games, it's kind of a classic trope where you're fighting someone for a while and then they get kind of discarded and you find the real bad guy, right? Because he's like the mm-hmm, god mm-hmm. or the multi-dimensional mastermind. Yeah, exactly. So I do hope they don't go quite in that direction, which, to be fair, all of the direction that we've been getting from the marketing and the development team so far has kind of hinted at, you know, it's more of like a summer vacation. The community is really fond of the phrase beach episode, but it does seem to be like more chill vibes. And you see that in the trailer, even the music, you know, when you're listening to a lot of what Soken's writing.
It is very tropical.
Yeah. It's leaning into that vibe hard.
I think that's a trap. I think the initial presentation of like, oh, we want to give all the Warriors of Lights like a summer vacation, I think it is a carefully crafted like PR move to put our minds in a particular mindset.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it is kind of like a little, like, I think it is a very thinly veiled trap, but it's definitely a trap, especially when you look at some of the concept art that's on its way. Like,
right. No, all the Solution 9 stuff.
This is clearly not. Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, we'll definitely get into some of the more like, I don't know, like trickle feeding of information and trying to like, you know, like dissect it within our limited capabilities. Mm-hmm. I don't think we have as much discipline to like scour every little pixel, but I think we still have thoughts. We've, you know, kept up with some of the FanFest stuff, but getting a little ahead of ourselves here for a bit. I do want to touch on something that you had mentioned of, like the kind of like theming and vibe that the team has been kind of like pushing out the whole summer vacation.
Yeah.
There is another, I think, line of kind of, I think, like maybe like
thinking,
like teasering, thinking. Yeah. Kind of specifically with how it might connect with Final Fantasy IX.
Oh, okay.
Like with the pre-order bonus being a, you know, Zidane minion.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the, I guess, astute observers on Reddit have pointed out some other similarities between Final Fantasy IX and the very recent Dawn Trail trailer, like the official launch trailer that dropped a little while ago.
Have you seen it? Did you watch it?
I did.
Oh, I'm surprised.
There are some new characters. Well, I did it for this episode. Oh, normally, okay. I wouldn't.
That's so funny. Yeah. Usually, like, so just for context for you guys, I'm the type of guy who will like absorb all the hype going into like a movie or a game, read all the theories, you know, basically spoil myself before going in just so I can be as prepared as possible. And Paul here is usually the exact opposite. If he knows he's going to watch or read something, he avoids everything about it so he can go in with a fresh perspective. So that's why I'm just so surprised, because we kind of traded roles here.
Yes, exactly. So I am 100% on the side of I want to know as little as possible about any kind of media, really, because all I really need to decide is, am I going to watch it? Or in this case, am I going to play it?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, yes. And so I want to be surprised at every little like detail. But for this episode specifically, I felt like I should arm myself with a little bit more knowledge. And so I did watch the launch trailer. I did, you know, even things like watching FanFest is something that I normally would not do, but here we are. So, you know, back to the Final Fantasy IX bit, because, okay, I'm going to have to like take a step back for a bit and try to explain my reasoning for some of my tie-ins with Final Fantasy IX. This starts with the end of Endwalker, starting with the 6.x patches. I think it kind of picks up maybe around like 6.3, where you get introduced to Zero, and then you have the whole story that kind of pans out with her and like the Void, like, which I think is supposed to be the 13th reflection right, of the source.
Yep.
And if you look at those patches, specifically the story from the lens of Final Fantasy IV, which all of Endwalker is very clearly
for sure like,
inspired from, right? And it's so hard to call it like actual ties, right? It's more like there's like parallel themes between Final Fantasy IV and Endwalker, like 6.0 all the way to 6.5. You can see a lot of parallels. I mean, Zeromos, just as, you know.
Yeah, the Four Fiends. Pretty obvious. Golbez, Baron. It's just chock full of Four references.
Yeah, and, like, you know, Zero going from, like, a dark clothed Reaper, turning into a paladin. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, plain to see. So with that same train of thought, if, you know, CBU3 is kind of tugging similarly from Final Fantasy IX, my first kind of more real theory and kind of, like, expectation or prediction here is that we are going to have one of those, like, there is a hidden world, there's another world. Some of that is a little bit, you know, obvious from the concept art, but I think it'll run kind of parallel to the kind of Gaia versus Terra that we see in Final Fantasy IX.
That is a good theory.
So, like, Gaia would be, you know, or rather what we see in, like, Tulyolal, that'll be, like, the Gaia. And then the Solution 9, the more super high-tech civilization, right, that's going to be the Terra.
Uh-huh.
How they'll interact with each other, I don't know to what extent, right? But there definitely is a very tight coupling that we see, again, from the trailers and concept arts that's been released so far. But I think, like, as a baseline, this is kind of like a safe bet, right? Like that's what the relationship is going to kind of look like.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they have not been shy about saying and, you know, being pretty obvious with their F9 references, similar to...
It's like, what is this world?
Exactly. And they did something similar with FF4 going into Endwalker, you know, the pre-order bonus then, I believe, was like a Rydia minion or Rosa minion, Edge minion. I forget exactly. They had the twins. And I remember one of the popular theories going into Endwalker was that Alize and Alphina would either die or get turned into stone, you know, similar to Apollo. So everyone was thinking that. They were like, that was such a popular theory. They didn't end up doing it. But, like, that was one of many wild theories because they're like, oh, well, it's the FF4 themed expansion. So I'm very curious because they're obviously going to take some stuff, but they won't do everything similar to that. So I think you're probably right on a general scale, but I'm curious what individual points they'll kind of take and then not really follow. That being said, this does make me want to comment a bit more meta on, like, the idea of pulling stuff from older FF games, which on the one hand is, like, part of the appeal of FF14, right? It's almost like a FF theme park where you're seeing a bunch of your old favorite characters and themes and zones. But on the other hand, I think 6.x was the first time where I thought that the FF references, specifically to FF4, were kind of taking away from the story of what was going on in the actual FF14 world, you know? And this might be more of a personal thing, but, like, it's kind of similar to, in a lot of modern media, you know, nostalgia is a big seller, right? Like, you can make movies and media and appeal to everyone's nostalgia by throwing in a bunch of fan service references to older things, right? But then in 6.1, when they introduce Golbez, it's very overt, and if you don't know FF4, you're not as, like, you're kind of just like, okay, or like, oh, cool. But, like, for me, I was really hyped when I first saw that cutscene, because, like, oh my gosh, that's Golbez, and those are the Four Fiends, like, I recognize all of this. But then I realized, you know, in post that, like, oh, you know, doesn't quite land as well if you don't play FF4, or you're not familiar with the story. And so I hope they don't do as much of that kind of referencing, or you don't understand the reference, and they stick more to just the, kind of those winks and those little Easter eggs that, yeah, if you get it, great. But if not, you're good. Because I think for the most part, as a whole, through, you know, from A Realm Reborn to now, I really like the way they've done FF references, because they have been kind of in that vein of, like, if you get it, great. But if not, there's still so much for you here to enjoy.
Yeah, and I think that's the, like, perfect sweet spot for a game like Final Fantasy XIV to sit in, where not having played through other Final Fantasy titles shouldn't subtract from your experience playing through the game. It should only be additive. And so I like that the FF14 story as a whole stands on its own two legs. It is not it doesn't need a crutch.
Yes. Right? It is a mainline FF title. That's right. All you FF fans who say 11 and 14 don't count, I am slapping you in the face. It is a mainline title, worthy with its own story, in my opinion, the best of them all. But I know that's a controversial personal opinion, so I won't push that.
I think it is a very defensible stance to take. Like, I'm as I was playing through, you know, all the expansions, I started on the, this is an online MMO. Like, how good could it be really? And just kind of slid to the other side of like, you know, this is a very worthwhile experience. And we can talk about this some another day. But as a whole, I don't think the Final Fantasy franchise is very good at telling stories. It's okay. It's okay. There are some that obviously stand out better than the others, right? But if you were to look at, like, go from 1 all the way to 16 and, like, judge each story, I don't think that is a very high aggregate score, right? And so I'll be really clear here. There are some that are outstanding. There are some that I'm sure people will absolutely crucify me for saying that, oh, how are you saying that this game's story sucks? No, I'm not saying that. There are good ones. But I think for every excellent Final Fantasy story, you have a Final Fantasy VIII.
Oh, you just broke the hearts of a lot of people. FF8 has a lot of fans, surprisingly.
Yes, but when we kind of decouple ourselves from, oh, like the fun that we had, right? And judge nostalgia. It just on the merits of its story. I mean, come on. Yeah, going back to this Final Fantasy flagship title. Yeah, I think it definitely does stand on its own legs. You don't need to play the other Final Fantasy games.
It helps.
James, one of our co-hosts, I think he's a living testament to that. He has played zero Final Fantasy games, and he has enjoyed, you know, playing.
I just remember we went to that FF concert last year, Distant Worlds, and James was like talking to one of the guys sitting next to him, and the guy was like, "You haven't played any other Final Fantasy besides 14? Like, why are you here?" He's just like, "I just love music and I love FF14, which was like totally valid. James had the time of his life there. But like, you know, it just goes to show, I think, exactly what you're saying, Paul. Like, you can totally play this game without playing any of the other FFs and have a fantastic time. Now, I did want to ask a little bit of a side, well, maybe not side question, but in the context of, like, you know, the whole FF14 saga going up to this point, right, where 1.0, even 1.0 kind of contributed to this whole Hylian Zodiark saga, which ended in 6.0. Do you think Dawn Trail will or should be kind of like its own, I don't want to use the term filler, but like its own standalone story arc? Or do you think it should start building up to the next, you know, grand saga? And it's possible to do both, but I'm curious, like, how much in one direction do you think it should really go?
This is kind of like my biggest crackpot theory. My mind would just explode if this happened.
Okay,
Like, so that's why
I'm so curious.
It's in that realm of crackpot. It'll be really cool with the existence of, you know, like Solution 9 and this like high tech city and all these mysteries surrounding it. It'd be really cool if that was kind of a like a setup for other Reflections primals.
Oh, okay.
So it'd be really cool if the story went in a direction where it's something like, hey, it turns out that primals are not unique to the source. What if there exists a reflection where the primals win? They don't get disintegrated. They defeat that world's Warrior of Light and they win. And there's a reflection where the primals are kind of ruling over the planet, and because the nature of a primal is that they suck the ether from the planet, this planet is dying. And so what choice do they have but to march into a different reflection, maybe the source. And maybe in that world they're not called primals, but they're called icons or, you know, eidolons, and maybe they look very mechanical, kind of like how Eidolons look really mechanical in Final Fantasy 13.
Oh, this was all just a ploy to get FF13 back in the game. I see you for what you are. I will say, that would be pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you look at a lot of the visuals, it doesn't look elegant.
Which is the main
like ancient civilization that, you know, we've been kind of, you know, like touching on. It looks very different. And I think I was the only one to say this, at least among the four of us, when they first start to show like the art. I was like, this looks like the high-tech civilization that you see in Final Fantasy 13. It's very reminiscent of that. I'm sure someone might fact check me and be like, no, this is actually wrong, da 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 da. But I'm just saying, like, I can see the inspirational draw.
Yeah, so there have been two dominant theories on Solution 9 that I've been reading on just like community speculation so far. One of them is kind of similar, basically that they are a transplant from another shard that, for one reason or another, had to escape, right? And so then they came to the source and somehow brought their city with them or built a new city, something like that, and were much more technologically advanced. The other theory is that it's, you know, I think you'll be very disappointed with this theory, that it's, surprise, ASEAN, one more time. And the reason for that is because people have been kind of breaking down the design of some of, like, the glyphs or the symbols that you see in a lot of the concept art for Solution 9 or the Arcadian, which is the raid series that's going to be in Dawn Trail. And they've been, like, basically saying, oh, like, it looks like this ASEAN sigil for this ASEAN that we haven't met yet, or another ASEAN thing from, you know, another thing. So there are people who are kind of on both sides here. Personally, I hope it's not ASEANs, just because, like, I would like to give that whole people a rest, you know? Let them rest. Let them just be out of the spotlight for a while.
I'm with you here.
And let's move on to something else.
So I would be okay with the ASEANs returning, but not now. It's too soon. Like, I think we need one or two expansions worth of just breathing, just to kind of like undo that tension.
What if they came back, but not as enemies, right? Not as the final boss, not as the antagonist. What if they came back as, like, potential allies?
So I would want that. Yes, that'd be super cool. But later.
Still later. I see. Yeah,
okay, still later. Because there's so much emotional, I think, investment in, like, all of this. You know, it's kind of like, you know, there's a room filled with oxygen, and that oxygen is ASEAN, the Ancients, Hydaelyn, Zodiac, you know, Azem, everything, and we just threw a match in that room, you know, and like all the oxygen is like...
I like the analogy, like, yeah.
We just did that, right? And so if we're to throw another match in that room, it's not going to hit as hard, and I think more often than not, when not exclusively gaming studios, but like when other like media companies do that kind of a move, it almost like backfires and ends up tarnishing what came before.
Yes, 100% agree. I won't get into this right now, but just one franchise this has definitely happened for me is Star Wars. That's it. No more Star Wars talk. Otherwise, we will enrage many people and also go
James will be very upset if we talk about Star Wars on this podcast.
Very true. Now, with all this talk about the ASEANs, I'm curious then, what do you think and or hope that the final boss for this expansion is, you know?
Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah, because like going into Endwalker, predominant theories were Xenos eating Zodiac, or Fandaniel, right? Those were the three like main like theories of, oh, this will be the final boss. And then there were some that were like, oh, well, in classic FF fashion, it's going to be something that we don't know or haven't seen yet, and then will end up being like the embodiment of despair or something, and like that's essentially what happened with Medion, but it was done in a more, you know, kind of a new way, which was cool, but yeah. So I'm curious, like, do you think the final boss, you know, there is that one Mamulja, I think, who like is kind of being set up as the antagonist in the 6.x 6.55 specifically, that Wuklamat is kind of making sure it doesn't become the new king. So could it be him? Could it be someone else from the kingdom? Could it be someone from Solution 9? You know, God forbid, an ASEAN. Like, what do you think? If you had to place a bet on, like, this is going to be the final boss, at least of 7.0. Because, again, if this follows the same structure as most expansions, then that means the actual final boss will be in 7.3.
Something completely different, yeah. Okay, I don't think it's anyone from the succession, at the very least.
Okay.
Like, it's not gonna, like, we're not gonna get some weird, like, oh, like, that fourth person who should never succeed. It was Wuklamat all along. You know, I don't think we're gonna have anything like that.
That would be horrible, yeah.
I would be surprised if this initial, like, premise that we have with the whole, like you know, battle of succession, if that really leads, or if that becomes very meaningful past like the initial story launch.
That's true,
because they were revealing a lot about the initial like area, and there's so much focus on this like battle for succession. that this can't possibly be tethered or pivotal to the main story at hand. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be like kind of like a launch into getting us to Leola.
Yeah, like the inciting incident.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, obviously we're going to uncover something else. And like, I think that something else is what's going to be the main kind of like heartbeat of the whole story. So given that, I don't really know. Mm. So I think I'll answer this by saying, I don't think it's tied with anyone in Tliolol. Mm. Does that make sense?
I think so. And I think I agree with you that it's not someone we've met yet, which is kind of new, but makes sense since Dawn Trail is kind of a reset. Because I was thinking through all of the previous expansions, you are always introduced to the boss of the 0.0, you know, 3.0, 4.0, 5.0, before the expansion comes out. Even if it's very briefly. Like for A Realm Reborn going to Heavensward, there's like a brief moment, and I think it's like 2.4 or 2.5, when they show King Thordon, I guess he's Archbishop Thordon at the time, with an Ascian behind him in Ishgard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And then in 3.x going into Stormblood, there's like a shot of Zeno sitting on the throne, like leaning on his chin, but like he has his helmet on so you can't see him, and he just says like, oh, this is going to be interesting. And then 4.x going into Shadowbringers, you had Emmett Selk being introduced. I think it's like 4.4 when he pops out behind the throne, starts taunting Varys, you know. But I don't think like it would really make sense for any of the existing characters to be the primary antagonist or the final boss for 7.0, just because we haven't met most of the characters. Whereas like the build for a lot of previous expansions, you get to meet a lot of those characters beforehand. I do think it'll be interesting to see like how they use existing characters, because that was actually one of the big community kind of complaints, quote unquote, going into Dawn Trail when like fan fests were happening and the trailer was being released, you know, part by part. A lot of people didn't like that all the Scions were coming. They're like, hey, give the Scions a break. Let us like get to know some new characters, you know. Like they didn't really just want to rehash with the same crew. I do think with 6.55, the way they're kind of splitting up the gang into multiple succession supporters.
Gosh, it's so good.
Yeah, I do like how they did that. So good. And I think that's kind of addressed the community's concern of like, oh, it's going to be Scions again. Because now it's like, well, we're still friends, but we're also competing with each other, which is really cool. As a side note, I really hope, like, either as a dungeon boss or even just a solo instance, we get to fight
the other side. Yeah, I was thinking the same.
That'll be so much fun. Let me punch Thancred. Let me attack Rionje. Not because I don't like them. I love them. But because I think it'd just be so much fun to have that, like, friendly battle
competition. Because they chose to back the wrong candidate. Exactly. And it's like, oh, it's going down.
Exactly. Also, by the way, I love how Estinian didn't even sign up with any, you know, succession crew. He's just, oh, where to go? Oh, I haven't gone west yet. Okay, let's sail west. It's just such an Estinian thing to do. And I love how they set that up.
Technically, at least from what we know so far, not everyone is boarding that first.
Exactly. That's exactly like, where I was going to go.
We are leaving some people behind. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
Grahatia.
I really like Grahatia. Mm-hmm. I am a little bit sad that he's been left behind. But I think it makes sense story-wise. I like the direction that they're kind of taking it. Mm-hmm. And I also like that, hey, maybe in exchange, right, we have Kryll.
Yeah.
Who I also really like as a character.
I'm really glad they're giving her more spotlight.
Yeah, for two whole expansions, I was like, oh my gosh, they just forgotten that she exists, isn't it? Like she's just become the new Manfilia. She's just back at the base.
I know.
Doing whatever. I was like, what the heck?
Getting captured.
And then,
yep.
And so I do appreciate the Kryll love.
Yeah, no, I am on the same page there. I'm so glad they gave her, you know, a little glow up Pictomancer.
The highlights.
Yeah, I'm like, she'll be a trust companion. She'll be on the front lines. Like, it's going to be great. I really like Kryll, and I'm glad that she's getting some more highlight because, you know, she's a Scion too. And, like, she didn't really get a chance to do that. Like, she was even excluded from the Endwalker key art. You know, you have every single Scion. You even have, like, Vana, you know, in the background. Xenos is on that art, and you don't have Kryll.
Shows up.
It's just like, man, they really did Kryll dirty.
They did her so dirty. Yeah. They did her so dirty. Yeah. So yeah, I'm super stoked to have Kryll back on the A team. I'm kind of sad that Graha takes a backseat,
but you know he's gonna come. He'll be back. He's eating tacos. He's gonna be back, and he's such a fan favorite.
Yeah, he's there.
Yeah, which
but that does make me wonder, like. How? What's going to be the reasoning for why he stops taking care of the students of Baldessian? Yeah. So what's going to happen that suddenly, like, pulls him out of it, or maybe the students of Valdez can send him out to do research. I don't know.
Right? Possibly.
But that is something that I am curious of, as to how are you going to, after putting so much effort into explaining why Graha stays and Kral goes, now Graha is also, you know, going overseas as well.
Yeah, he probably ended up dying in Eureka and was like, I need a change of environment, and then takes the next boat to the
UN. Yeah, dying in Eureka sucks.
Not based on any personal experience. I did not have to beg for three reses the other day. Totally not. No. Not me. What do you want from like post-game content in Dantrio? Because they have said this is going to be a priority, you know, for them. Like they want to make the sort of Eureka Bajia content, you know, because that was something that was severely missing from Endwalker. So they want to bring that back and hopefully, you know, do like the best iteration of it. So I'm curious, like,
oh my gosh, I didn't even realize
Endwalker doesn't have
it. There is no, yeah, there is no Bajia or Eureka equivalent because you get your relic weapon through the Banderville story quest or the like side quests.
Yeah, and people were very like, again, I'm saying people in general, but there's always, you know, there's differing opinions. But I do feel like majority sentiment was overall that was a bit of a negative, right? People didn't feel like they were able to spend as much time in the game as they wanted to because they didn't have a lot of content to do. And I know like Variant Dungeons, which was new to Endwalker, was supposed to kind of fill that void, but it really didn't fulfill that same type of content gap. So I'm curious if this new thing that they're working on for Dantrio, which I believe will launch in like 7.1, 7.2. Usually that's about when they bring in that Eureka-esque content. I'm curious how it'll go. And I really hope it's a hit because, you know, the dev team's been talking about making things more punishing and really challenging players. And I think that would just make things so much fun, especially if it's really good group content, right, that you can do with friends or even just, you know, other people playing the game online.
Okay, yeah, I do think that, yeah, it is a little bit lacking. I feel like with Endwalker, they kind of tried their best, I think, to substitute that with Island Sanctuary.
That's true,
which,
that's another one.
Personally, I am kind of enjoying it, but mostly because there isn't anything else to do. And I can kind of keep making forward progress on Island Sanctuary. But even then, it's like, it definitely has all of the smell of, this is here just to pad my playtime. Like, there are things that are meant and designed to be like a grind. However, I feel like instead of maybe backing away from something like Island Sanctuary to fill up that endgame like time, it almost seems like they're kind of doubling down because there's
The whole
lunar
like have your own planet thing. Yeah.
And so that does make me actually a little bit worried that they will, that maybe they got a bit of a misread on that.
So actually, this is a good note that I kind of brought up before, Paul. But regarding like the dev team, there was an interview with Yoshi P where he basically kind of said that he wanted the dev team to be more willing to take risks. Because up through Endwalker, you know, it was very much about keeping things kind of accessible, approachable, safe. For the player base, and part of that was good, right? Because it meant people were able to play the game very easily, you know, not super high barriers. But on the other hand, it did kind of like homogenize the gameplay. It made things a little more safe and predictable. And so he said that he wants the dev team to be more willing and open to take risks, and like be a bit more open to challenging player base expectations and trying new things rather than just focusing on comfort and familiarity. And there's a great interview with, you know, Preach Gaming, who's someone I follow for a lot of F14 things, who, you know, does some fantastic content, where he talks a bit more about that and probably, you know, summarizes what he said more accurately than I did. But I'm curious, like, just that idea of like a dev team challenging and trying more new things. What are your thoughts on that as a philosophy, both in general and then also applied specifically to, you know, this team for F14 and this game? Because like overall, it is a very predictable game. Very formulaic and almost like templatized, you know, like, oh, we're gonna get four dungeons, we're gonna get, you know, trials at 93, I forget the exact names, you know, 97, 99, and then the last one, 100. I could be getting some of the specific numbers wrong, but like the idea of just like, you can kind of predict everything. You know, every dungeon's gonna have three bosses, you know, probably like two mob poles in between each boss. if you go wall to wall. Yeah. So just curious, like, do you like that? Is that a plus?
Yeah. I did take a look at the interview as well, and it is a little bit sad. Not sad. Sad is too strong. It is a little bit disheartening to hear that the dev team, not just the dev team, but I mean, he seemed to allude to the whole production team as a whole, mm-hmm. That they started to kind of fear getting people upset, more than trying to keep pushing the boundary. I think it's always good, and I would want dev teams to be very aggressive with their ideas. I think they should always keep trying to push the boundary, because you don't get fun gameplay when only sticking with what's known. Mm. Right? Like, that being said, there's also the business side of the house, which almost feels like they're always in contention, because there are big ramifications for upsetting the player base if you make a decision that's really out there, or really I think multiple standard deviations from what the players expect, then that's going to turn people off from the game, because they're playing because they like what you have so far. That doesn't always mean that your next risky endeavor is going to be received well. For me, for instance, if CBU3 does something that's super out there, I will take that as they tried a thing. I don't like it, but good on them for trying. But I also know that not everyone will interpret, nor should everyone feel like they should be that forgiving or that open. Everyone has their own line as to how much how much deviation that they're willing to be okay with.
Yeah, we tend to complain a lot when we're online, just in general. The internet is not the most friendly place.
Yeah, and this does, and the last kind of point here is, it's so much easier to critique a decision and to be like, oh, you know what they should have done instead, now that I've seen this and have opinions on it, right? It's so much easier to take an existing idea, critique it, or even iterate it, than it is to come up with an idea completely fresh.
And I
this would be my attempt to try to blunt some of the harsher criticisms that people may have on the decisions that the studio has made regarding Final Fantasy 14. It's way easier to look at an existing idea and be like, you know what, they should have done this better, like this, than it is to start from a blank slate and to build something that even gets that kind of reception. It's just worlds apart in terms of the sheer scale of difficulty. So something to just kind of, I think, keep in mind next time, any of us get, particularly irked at one feature or thing. The game isn't perfect. If it was, we should stop playing, because our interaction with it will make it imperfect. So
well said. I do think you hit a good point too, that a lot of the familiarity and kind of that template of the content is also tied to the business side, right? Where, especially coming out of the dumpster fire that was 1.0, and just they spend so much time working on specific individual pieces that were really good, but then when they put the package together, it was awful. And so out of that, just coming up with a much more structured approach, much more templatized workflow process, that helps them manage their team, right? And be able to keep people employed and more accurately project work for their team. And that's a good thing for them, because it helps them to focus more on just the content and making it as good as possible. But that does mean that said content is very predictable and very, following that template. So it's a bit of a trade-off. But I think, looking at history in the context of this team, it makes sense why they are the way that they are. And can't really argue with the results, They've had a lot of success, especially with Shadowbringers and Endwalker. So hoping that continues into Dawn Trail. But I also agree that, some diversity and some new changes would really help mix things up. One thing I will rightfully criticize the team for, though, the dev team, give us hats, Viera and Hrothgar. Come on. I was patient. I was like, okay, you know what? Shadowbringers, I get it. Sure, this is a complicated race. Bunny ears. Oh, gosh. So hard. And then going into, Endwalker. Okay, sure. Focus was on just nailing the story, getting that done. But it's been so long since then. And then Dawn Trail, I really thought they were going to announce, all headgear now applies to Hrothgar and Viera. Nothing. Not a single update. Okay,
But in case this helps make you feel better.
I don't think it will.
I get to wear my glasses other helmets.
You know, that is actually
That's cool. Why I said if it makes you feel better, right? But I'm happy over here. All of my characters wear glasses. I feel like the you know, like vision impaired folks are highly underrepresented in a lot of these games. And so I am glad that you can wear glasses.
That's a good point.
I wear glasses in real life, and I feel like my characters should also have equal disabilities and wear glasses themselves. So I'm really glad that I can now wear glasses on top of helmets. I feel like I need to protect my face.
Can you do?
And I also need to see. And this can work.
Can you do double glasses? If you equip headgear that is glasses, and then you use the fashion accessory.
You know, I don't see why not. I mean, I'm gonna try it once Don showed up.
First thing you do when you log in, screw like MSQ. Yeah, screw new glasses, just start. You know, actually, though, that is, like, going to be a lot of the player base. Like, real talking. So many people, the first thing they're going to do is check their glam, check the new dye channels. Like, there's a reason that announcement at FanFest was one of the loudest reactions that they got when they announced that there were two dye channels. Like, our community loves
I'm so excited.
Fashion. I'm also excited.
I'm very excited with the multi-dye channels as well.
So moving on to a different side of gameplay, I'm curious in terms of like the visuals or really what you're going to see, whether that be zones, you know, areas that we're going to, cities, even like mobs and monsters, like what do you want to see? You know, and obviously this will be based on what they've shown us as well, but we also know they're saving some stuff, you know, they're hiding, especially the Lost Zone. They never show the Lost Zone in any promotional material for an expansion. You know, so like, what are some things that you want to see? Like, I am really excited to kill Swole Cactar. Jumbo or
already Barrel one. Tender.
Is that the official name?
He has a name.
He's just Swole Cactar to me. I love that.
He is Swole Cactar.
Yeah. But I'm curious, are there any other like monsters you want to see? Maybe previous FF references? Or just general like zone types, you know? I'm pretty like high on the cowboy aesthetic for the like the Wild West area. But
You and James are oddly very like on board
with
the yeehaws.
Yeehaw. I don't know. I think it's a type of aesthetic you don't really see a lot in like fantasy and video games, you know? Like the only exception would be like a game that's dedicated to that, like, you know, Red Dead Redemption or something. You're never going to see it as like part of a larger world, you know? And it's always the medieval fantasy, the Asian country, you know, like with the samurai or, you know, and then like, it's just kind of like those are always the popular things. And so I like that they're giving a little love to the desert, you know, area and the Wild West of, you know, just like that aesthetic.
I would say I am looking forward to that aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see like a proper jungle. We haven't really seen like proper jungle because, you know, the regions that are the actual like, you know, the real world places that the current regions are a part of, none of them are in the jungle. Yeah. They're all in Europe and Asia. Mm-hmm. Or, you know,
they're equivalent. Yeah. Yep.
So I'm pretty stoked to see some actual jungles. It'll be a different flavor that we haven't seen. Same goes for the deserts, which I think is, you know, aimed more towards like North America, the whole Wild West, the cowboy thing. Like this all kind of tracks.
And then you have Solution 9.
It's fresh. and then we have Solution 9
just its own thing.
I am in particular kind of looking forward to the Arcadian. Because something that we have also not seen that I was looking forward to when I went to the Gold Saucer for the first time was something equivalent to like the Battle Square.
Oh, yeah. That's actually a really good point.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that.
There isn't really anything to like, you know, like Gladiator Arena. I know that the Gladiator Guild exists, right? But it's really for story purposes. Yeah, but like something gameplay related where it's like, here you go, like, duke it out with whatever, whoever, you know.
As a side note,
it's not really a thing that exists in the FF14 world. I think aside from that, like Barrel Tender, the Arcadian, I think from what we've seen so far, those are kind of like the two big highlights.
I love how Barrel Tender is its own highlight. I agree, for sure.
Okay, if they don't make a Barrel Tender mount and a Barrel Tender minion, you know that there's going to be a riot, and I'll be right in the heart of that as well.
You know what I think does look good? The alpacas or the llamas. I'm sorry, people are going to be angry at me. I don't know, really know the difference between the two. I know there is a difference, but I don't.
They are alpacas. I don't think llamas are in the Americas.
Are they not?
See, now I've kind of stuck my neck out there again. They're going to eviscerate me too.
Well, regardless, those animals that they've featured so far in a lot of the screenshots and videos, they look really good. And they're really cute, really well done. I just want to give them a little shout out too. Mm. They're not a mob. You know, they're more of a mount slash like creature. Or actually, maybe they'll be a mob, right? I mean, you can go kill chocobos in Giovanni and Foreland. So who knows? Maybe they'll let you kill those too, which would be really sad. But yeah, no, I
think you're being really being pro animal death.
I'm not against you know, killing chocobos. I do think it's a little sad. What about the new classes? What do you think about Viper, Pictomancer, both like aesthetic?
Okay, and so man, people are gonna
don't worry about people.
I'm gonna upset a lot of people with this. Go for it. You know what? It's okay. I don't like the Pictomancer class.
Wait, really? I'm actually surprised.
Here is my kind of take on the Pictomancer, because the original Pictomancer, I guess it wasn't, I mean, she wasn't really called a Pictomancer. The skill was called Pictomancy, and then she can sketch, right? But Realm's Pictomancy wasn't really good.
actually, I never used it, Her and Gao in FF6, I never used either of them.
so one, the Pictomancy wasn't really that good or particularly fun to use, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like a lot of the hype around the Pictomancer is more for like nostalgia's sake, like, oh, you like really, I know what that is. So I do think it is kind of cool to have a like drawing sketching kind of gameplay. I think it's pretty creative, rather unique. I also like the art style of it. The way that
like the effects.
I don't know if I'm trying to describe like a visual thing like with words, but like brush strokes and the way that it kind of like gets stored. I think it looks really cool.
I agree.
And the art style is very distinct. Don't actually do this, but if you were to go enter into an alliance raid, turn on everyone's visual effects.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's like, and you know, everyone's effects look very samey.
Your eyeballs will melt.
Like all of the actual, your eyeballs will melt initially, but once you get over the eyeball melting, you'll notice that the actual particle effects or all of the different, like even some animations, they all kind of are drawn from the same like palette of visual
effects. It's a lot of light, which, you know, Warrior of Light, can't really blame them, but yeah, you're totally right.
So I do appreciate that the Pictomancer's like visual effects look very painty.
Yeah.
They look inky almost. It actually kind of reminds me of like artsy Splatoon. So I do like that. But I do wonder if the draw for playing as Pictomancer might just kind of be that, like, oh, it's just it's drawing stuff.
I actually thought it was kind of the other way around, where this was a class that wasn't as FF nostalgia based, you know, like Dragoon is clearly, and that's why it's one of the starting classes, right? That came with the original game. Not even just 2.0, but even 1.0. Like, that is clearly FF, like, nostalgia class. Even, like, Red Mage, you know, that's another one. Whereas for Pictomancer, really, Realm is the only previous example. You know, it's not like this is a FF staple. And so it carries that, like, you know, oh, that's so cute, or, like, that's cool. I recognize that from FF6, if you played FF6. But otherwise, it's not really a nostalgia play for anyone else, you know? So I almost felt like the appeal was more of just like, you get to play as something that's not really like anything else, you know? It's not another sword class. It's not another mage class, precisely. But it's like, you're an artist. And like, it's a new aesthetic to bring to the table, which I think I did. Like, I agree with you. I think they did a fantastic job bringing that to life. Remains to be seen how it feels to play, obviously. But so far, I'm a big fan of the Pictomancer. Viper, I'm kind of torn on. On the one hand, I think it's a cool class just in isolation. And like, from what I've seen so far from the animations, like, very well done. It looks really cool. And like, just the idea of like...
It does.
Like, dual blade that links up into like a Darth Maul just like a double blade, I guess. That's like one you hold with one hand kind of thing. Very cool idea. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it is just another dual wield class, which when you already have like ninja, it seems a little overlappy to me, especially because the class symbol looks a lot like gladiator with the two swords crossed. Which I know, like, that's not really that important, but it does, like, it is a little redundant. Just like, oh, swords again. Now, it's like when people in Super Smash Brothers complain about, oh, there's another anime swordsman. Like, sure, there's not, like,
there's another Fire Emblem sword wielder.
Basically, yeah, let's be real. But, like, the sword is really overdone and really overplayed. And so, like, for that reason, I'm a little less, like, excited about Viper. But it does look really fun to play. So, you know. Maybe, and I do. I am intending to main Viper going into at least the MSQ. Whether I continue after that, we'll see. But yeah, I do think, like, in terms of like the aesthetics and the fantasy, it's not really there for me compared to like Pictomancer, which I think is much more unique. So that's just my take, though.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think as kind of meh as I am on Pictomancer, I think I am more meh on the Viper class. Part of it is because there's a very direct collision with the main class that I play, which is Samurai. Like, oh, I can shift from one melee DPS to another melee DPS, except that melee DPS starts at level 80. Mine's level 90. I didn't know this, but while I was kind of doing a little bit of research into the Viper class, it was inspired by Sword Art Online.
Wait,
they wanted to make, like, literally, like, Kirito and his dual wielding.
That's
like
a negative for swords. Me, if that's true. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, there was inspiration taken to make something similar to that. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, though. Like, it's the fact that it's swords is actually what kind of bothers me. Aside from playing as Samurai, I do... if I were to say that I have a second class, I would say it's a Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I was initially leaning towards Gunbreaker, but I got hit with sword fatigue. I know that a gunblade isn't really a sword. The whole thing explodes, whatever. But like, at the end of the day, it's a sword that explodes. You have to describe it by saying it's a sword that explodes. Mm-hmm. And so, given that I already play as a samurai who can use another sword, I know it's a katana. Okay, get it. It's a sword. Yeah, I think now it's like, you know, first you've seen one sword, then a sword and a shield. Now it's two swords. And it's like, okay, like I feel like there are a lot of other, like, I think, interpretations of, you know, like a dual weapon wielding class that I think could have been more creative.
All right, so we're getting close to launch, at least at the time of this recording. And, you know, I'm probably not going to be no-lifing it quite as much as I did with Endwalker, where I beat the whole MSQ in like 4 days. But, you know, I definitely will be really excited to see kind of where the story goes from here. I will say I'm expecting it to not be like Endwalker level, obviously, because how are you going to recreate 5 expansions worth of content in hype? You know, you just can't. So
yeah,
for me, I think I'll be satisfied if it's like Heavensward level, or maybe this is controversial, but even
that's a really high
even Stormblood. Yeah, because I'm gonna say Heavensward is really good. I'm not like listening to myself, it sounded like I'm saying like Heavensward is just okay, which is not the case at all. But this team has also blown me away in terms of storytelling, and so I have really high expectations. Right, 6.x was a little disappointing, specifically starting from 6.3 onwards. I really liked 6.1 and 6.2. But I thought 0.3 through 0.5 were kind of more by the numbers, you know, and not really doing anything new. So I'm hoping that 7.0 kind of gets us back to at least Heavensward or even Stormblood level of storytelling. I know a lot of people don't like Stormblood, and I think a lot of the hate is exaggerated, where people hate on it because people hate on it. I think there's still a lot of good story beats in Stormblood. So for me, if it's like Stormblood level or better, I think I'll be pretty satisfied, especially if it, you know, starts building up to future expansions either directly or indirectly. But curious, what are your how good do you think it'll be relative to previous expansions? What are your hopes for it? I want to hear your thoughts.
Something that I just realized while we're talking about this is that this is the first time this team gets to create a story from as close to scratch as you're gonna get.
Mm-hmm.
And so when looking at it from that perspective, I've actually kind of taken a step back a little bit of like, you know, yeah, let's see what they can come up with a, you know, relatively blank slate. Mm. They can go in whatever direction they want. And so given that they're no longer kind of shackled with having to, you know, like redo the whole game, you know, do like a 2.0 that needs to, you know, satisfy multiple things, they actually get a pretty blank slate. Obviously not completely zero, but they really can run off in lots of different directions. And so I think I'll be kind of looking at it from that lens. So like, hey, you guys have a, you know, you guys can start from zero now.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
I would still expect, you know, phenomenal storytelling just because that's what they've produced mm-hmm. for multiple expansions now.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't have any doubts on the quality of storytelling per se, as much as just the direction.
Mm.
I think if I had to kind of summarize it, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm right with you there. I think I am, like, again, I'm not expecting Shadowbringers or Endwalker just because those relied so mm-hmm. much on what came before. But I do think even A Realm Reborn had some great moments and good story beats. And I think if they could just create more of those. you guys can't see this, but right as I said that, Paul just made the most, like, questionable, like, really face. So maybe I'm alone in that.
A Realm Reborn is just one of the stories of all time. Okay,
it's overall, it's like kind of, it's okay, but there are some points in it that I really like, individual pieces. And so
I hope that the comparisons we make to Dawn Trail is not really like, oh, we got to compare it to
Avalon. Oh, for sure. Like, no,
it can reach higher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I am not. Okay, let me rephrase. I am not saying that it needs to be at least a Realm Reborn quality, because that would be a major downgrade.
That's a low bar.
But I'm just saying that they can at least reach the peaks of A Realm Reborn, you know, and start from there.
Okay.
Because I do think there were some peaks that were really good. It's just the majority of the whole package wasn't that the case. So, again, right. If it's like Stormblood level at least, I think I'll be satisfied. Other people, maybe they're expecting at least Heavensward, depending on your personal ranking. You know, that can mean a lot of different things. But for me, yeah, I think hoping for Heavensward, but okay with Stormblood in terms of my personal rankings there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just ready to go off on another adventure.
Agreed.
I feel like it's really been a while. So, pretty stoked, pretty hyped.
Same.
That's our show. If you like this episode, consider subscribing to our podcast. If you really like this episode, let us know with a review as well. Thanks for listening to the Secret Chocobo Club, and we'll see you next time.